It's Wrecking Ball Radio. This is Stavin's Den.
And we are back, part two of Davin's Den. Pip, Joe, and me coming at you live. Got a lot of good topics on this segment. Girthy things that we could really sink our meat into, and a silly thing at the end. So, but kind of a gross thing, kind of a silly thing. All right, let's do some School of Fools. This is not silly. Wisconsin parents are suing two school districts over their COVID-19 mitigation efforts, arguing that the system failed to protect their children from getting infected. The first lawsuit was filed in federal court last week by Shannon Jensen against the Waukesha School District, the Waukesha Board of Education, a number of school board members, and district employees, according to the court documents. Jensen said in court documents that she sent her three children to Rose Glen Elementary School from 2020 to 2021 school year, and that the school implemented masking, temperature checks, plexiglass dividers, and contact tracing. But this school year, the district school board voted to remove most mitigation, including masking requirements. The family had their three children wear masks daily, but many other students did not do the same, according to court documents. The lack of mitigation and delay in communication about infections was a risk to the community, Jensen said in her declaration. Her son had attended community church and Cub Scout functions before testing positive. Now I'm going to play audio that CNN did. In an interview with the parent from the second lawsuit. I'm actually going to play the full thing. It's about 4 minutes because it's pretty interesting. They do a nice job of summarizing what's going on. You get the mother and you also get the attorney, which will answer some of the questions that we might have and go, well, how can you make such a claim against the school district? So I'm going to play that whole thing.
A Wisconsin mom is suing the school district that her child is in after she says her 7-year-old son got COVID from a classmate who was not wearing a mask. Gina Kildall says her son wore a mask to school every day, but her school district does not mandate masks for students or staff. The lawsuit says by bringing students back to class around unmasked staff, reinstitution, extracurricular activities, and allowing potentially contagious visitors and volunteers into the school without masks, school district of Fall Creek and the Fall Creek Board of Education threw students into a COVID-19 snake pit that by removing their COVID-19 mitigation measures, they are needlessly and recklessly endangering the health and safety of their students. And joining me now is Gina Kildall, the plaintiff, and her attorney, Frederick Melms. Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us. Gina, just tell us a little bit about your son, how he's doing, and how you believe he got infected.
My son is doing very well. Fortunately, he was asymptomatic from COVID. I am concerned about long-term effects that COVID could have on his health, whether or not he had symptoms. But I do believe that he contacted COVID from school. There were several emails and calls that went out sending different amounts of children home. And when he was finally identified as a close contact, he was tested positive within 3 days. And my husband and myself, neither one of us were tested positive. We tested negative several times.
Okay, so according to your lawsuit, your school does not enforce mask wearing, right? That's not enforced for students or for staff. That's not in line with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction and also CDC guidelines. What are you hoping to achieve with this lawsuit?
I am just hoping that they will start masking and take some responsibility to keep our kids safe at school. On my school's website, on all of their board documentation, they say that they want to provide a safe place to learn. And I think that to do that, especially with a Delta variant out there, they need to start masking kids. And it's very hard for small children, especially when they're getting picked on, to not pull those masks down. Universal masking is what our county health department suggests, just so that all the kids are on the same playing level.
Picked on because you mean they're getting picked on for wearing masks?
Correct.
Frederick, what are the legal grounds here?
Yeah, well, we've got a couple of different arguments. The first is that the school is effectively creating this risk of infection, which provides them the responsibility to take some mitigation measures and try to protect the students. The second claim we're making is effectively that due to a special relationship between the school and the students, they have that responsibility as well. And finally, we're arguing that the school is effectively hosting a daily super spreader event by holding classes, and they have a responsibility to the community to try and mitigate the number of infections within the school.
So key to this would be proving that Gina's son contracted COVID in the school. Clearly there was exposure, but there could always be doubt. I'm sure someone opposing your lawsuit could say, oh, there was community spread. It could have been somewhere else. How do you prove that her son was infected in school?
I've already been speaking with experts in the field, and they feel pretty confident they'll be able to write a report or to testify, depending on how everything goes, that the infection was most likely.
All right, and that was done by CNN. Like I said, I thought that was a pretty good interview. Further, so what she's claiming is that the Fall Creek School District, the board, its superintendent, individual board members, for recklessly refusing to implement COVID-19 mitigation strategies recommended by CDC, according to the complaint, by bringing students back to class around unmasked, reinstituting extracurricular activities, and allowing potentially contagious visitors and volunteers into schools without masks, FCSD and the board threw students into a COVID-19, quote, snake pit, Slash was very pleased, creating an affirmative duty to keep their students safe from COVID-19. Doll's complaint read, the CDC recommended that all school staff and students wear a mask indoors regardless of their vaccination status, but these measures have not been universally instituted. The risk of coronavirus infection among children appears to be similar as among adults, but kids are more likely to be asymptomatic, according to a new study in the Journal of JAMA Pediatrics. So I put a poll up, and the question on the poll was, Wisconsin parents are suing their school districts because their children contracted COVID-19 and the schools did not follow CDC guidelines. The children were exposed to COVID in school. Should the schools be held liable for the contraction of COVID? 44.4% said yes. 55.6% said no. I kind of like this. Because why shouldn't they be held responsible? I mean, even the counties where these schools are saying you should mask the kids. Maybe if we held these people responsible, we would have less of these crazy school board meetings where people are, I don't know, quoting Satan. I don't know what the hell they're quoting. Because sometimes they speak in tongues. It's the most absurd stuff you've ever seen. It's like not even rational conversations, and they're threatening school board members. So you know what? Maybe if the courts say, you know what, you're liable, maybe that'll put an end to all the freaking craziness, because the school board can say, what do you want us to do? Do you want your tax money going to defend lawsuits? I don't think you do. Or do you want it going to your education? Maybe that's the way to get past all this. I kind of like it. I kind of hope they win.
My question is this. There was the sick classmate that was in the school did not wear a mask. Shouldn't they, the parents of that kid, Did they know that he was sick and they sent him to school? Was that kid vaccinated?
No, I'm assuming the kid was not vaccinated. I'm assuming the kid wasn't vaccinated.
We're assuming, okay. Now, the kid that was wearing the mask...
Well, it's elementary school, Joe. A lot of this was in an elementary school. They couldn't have been vaccinated. They can't get the vaccine.
Okay. All
right.
Because basically, those kids, kids like that recover a lot quicker. And maybe they felt it would be more traumatic than recovering from the COVID, that could be the reasoning there. Also, taking the decision away from the parents. I mean, if the parents feel it, a lot of the parents feel that the school, a school's take enough precedence doing things that they're not thrilled about, and this is another one.
Yeah, but you know what? You elect people to make decisions for you. School boards and teachers and principals and any are entrusted with protecting the children. When you have the federal government and you have the local governments, the county governments, and the, saying this is what you should mask up, and the school saying our job is to protect the children, it seems like a slam dunk. It seems pretty easy. Listen, I'm thrilled that our schools have masking. And I don't like wearing a mask, but I understand that there's people that are too young to get masked and they're in close proximity with each other. As it is, I'm not happy that they took away the plexiglass and they moved the desk closer. You know, I'm surprised we haven't been shut down because of COVID like we were last year. But it just, you know what? I think it'll really, if the courts rule for these parents, I think it'll really fucking calm people down. And we can move on and go, well, it's the law. What do you want me to do? Because you know what? Let's be honest. The parents decide. How many times do I go on this show and tell my friends in the various professions that the problem with our society is we have shitty parents and we expect our teachers and the police to do everything? How many times have I said that when we're talking about stories about the police or stories about teachers? I go, well, what do you want? You're being a shitty goddamn parent. So I'm not going to trust parents to make good decisions because they're fucking stupid. They are stupid. I said
they
it.
They really are.
The kid that got sick from the other kid was wearing a mask. So the mask really work in that environment?
No. Well, no. Everybody's supposed to be wearing a mask. So the one who got infected was wearing a mask. The one who was sick, who spread the virus, was not wearing a mask. Masks work best if everybody's wearing a mask. And it's not like when you walk into school, you got to take a test. You know, I was bitching about Broadway last week, where everybody's showing that they're vaccinated or, you know, a proof of a test. This is not that. You just go in. And I know, because I've dealt with it in my school system, where the parents are not responsible. They're sending their kids to school sick. Listen, it's not like it was in 2019 where you
said
the
kids. That's my key contention here. They're going to school this district. I think that if they're going to sue, I would say that the parents that sent the sick kid to school should be named in the suit as well.
Well, I mean, it's possible they might be added. I can't disagree with you, but you know, lawsuits always go for the biggest pocketbook. And
the second thing, the story I didn't mention, which I'm curious about, is how long these kids were sick for. Did he recover in 3 days?
Well, the kid, from what I read from the kids that got infected and the parents that are suing, the kids actually did not get very sick. So, yeah, but that has nothing to do with it because they could have been spreading it to other people who did get sick. One of the lawsuits said that my kid was going to, you know, Boy Scouts, was doing this, that, the other. You have older parents. So that really shouldn't weigh in that these particular children did not have a bad case of COVID. They could be spreading it. And you know what? You send your children. Why do we have security guards now at schools to keep the kids safe? There's much less of a chance of a shooter coming to a school than COVID-19 passing around through the school. I mean, we do things to protect our children. Growing up, we didn't have security guards, but times have changed, and now you have security guards and metal detectors and all that stuff and drills on what to do when there's an active shooter. Times have changed. You can't stick your head in the sand. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Wear the fucking mask. And I really do think if the school districts lose this law, you will see it fucking change. Now, it could go all the way up to the Supreme Court. It might do that, but I think that would be good for the country. So we know where we stood. So we didn't have to have these contentious, awful school board meetings where people are threatening each other. And that's why I say, Joe, no, I don't trust the parents. I see them carrying on. They're fucking morons. I'm a parent. I know what's best for your kid. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because if you did, we wouldn't have to have family protective services, would we? No, you don't. There's bad parents. I said it.
Yeah, there are.
Concerned parents, you know, I mean...
That's fine! Joe, I have no problem with concerned parents. If you want to go to a school board meeting and voice your concern, that's fine. It's when they get batshit and start threatening people that I have problems. But, yeah, but the concern...
The FBI gets concerned about and wants to look in on that. Meanwhile, there's Chinese spy planes flying over that they didn't even fucking realize. So So, this is the state of affairs that we're in right now.
Okay, but that doesn't have to do with this. But thank you for that.
It does, because I don't think we're focusing on the FBI where they really need to be focused on, or intelligence.
Well, we have Space Force. They'll get right on that, Joe. It was an outer space the missile. And it landed a couple dozen miles away from where we're supposed to. So the Chinese can't even fucking hit a target. The Chinese shoot missiles the way they fucking drive. Badly. Okay, let's move on. I might have just gotten canceled for that. I don't give a shit. I just call parents stupid. So, all right. So now, Joe. Now you can get excited, because now we're going to talk about a Biden policy. So now you can wet your incisors. You tried to jump the gun a little too early to stick your fangs into Biden. But now this is the story where we're actually talking about a Biden policy, where you'd be, where if you feel inclined, you could stick your fangs in. So,
fight.
President Joe Biden's
goading him. I think that's upset when we don't fight. I don't have time either. I got to do another show at 10 o'clock.
No, you don't have to do another show. You chose to do another show. You don't have to. You're not getting paid for this special appearance. Relax. All right.
Getting paid for this one either.
Well, it's not so special now, is it? It's not so special. President Joe Biden's $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation plan includes proposals that would give the Internal Revenue Service more scrutiny over bank accounts. The proposal would require banks, credit unions, and other financial companies to monitor deposits and withdrawals in accounts that have balances above $600 at any time during the year. If you just happen to hit the lottery and get up to $600, boom, you're on the radar. That would include the vast majority of personal and small business accounts. Because if you don't have that much, what's the point of dealing with a fucking bank? They're going to all those fees, you're not going to have that money for long anyway. Critics say this would burden financial institutions with new requirements and expose consumers and businesses to privacy incursions and possible data breaches. Supporters contend bank customers would face no new obligations while giving the IRS more information to pursue tax cheats, primarily among the wealthy. They hope to close a tax gap estimated around $600 billion annually. Holy shit, that's a lot of fucking money. $600 billion that the government's entitled to that they have not collected.
But the funny thing is, when you put it to the trillions of dollars they're going to spend, doesn't seem that much.
And wait, so they make the limit $600 because they're going for the wealthy? Yeah, right.
We'll go on. We'll continue. The idea is to require banks, credit unions, and other providers of financial services to track and submit information to the IRS about the total inflows and outflows of every account that features a balance above $600 at any point during the year, or with at least that much in annual transactions. Reports submitted by banks to the IRS would break down the numbers to include physical cash transactions per account, any transactions with a foreign account, and transactions between accounts held by the same owner. The IRS wouldn't receive details on individual transactions, but rather gross yearly totals. That's kind of interesting. The $600 figure...
Speaking of gross...
Yeah, really...
The $600 figure isn't set in stone. Some media reports have indicated it could be increased to, say, $10,000, the level at which banks report transactions in an effort to combat money laundering. So what they're saying is they wouldn't have to do anything extra, per se, if they made it at the $10,000. That's interesting. A Treasury summary of the plan indicated there would be no further record-keeping or reporting requirements for individuals or businesses, and that taxpayers wouldn't face any burdens at all. The Treasury also noted banks and other financial providers already have access to this information and already report interest income above $10. I did not know that. Financial institutions would report the information on an expanded form, the 1099-INT, which for Jets and Giants fans means 1099, oh shit, there's another interception. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. So that what happens is on the 1099 INT New York New Jet version, you think the money is going one way, but then all of a sudden you make a bad transaction and the money goes in the complete opposite direction. That's what that means for New York sports fans.
The Jets didn't do too bad this week.
I'm waiting for it, Joe, because I know the second half of that. Because they were off this week. Right, Joe. Okay. But don't worry. The Giants stunk enough for both teams.
No, stink isn't the fucking word. Don't get me started. Don't get me started.
All right, well. Not my fault your team sucks. Treasury Secretary... Treasury said, but you told me years ago you were watching football, so this must only be a rumor. You told me years ago you were giving up the NFL. Must be a rumor that you're hearing. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said the forms would include one box for total deposits or inflows and one box for total withdrawals or outflows. While the forms wouldn't list taxable transactions, customers still might be confused about what to do with the information, wrote Scott Earle, president and CEO of Mountain West Credit Union, in commentary in the Arizona Republic. Banks and other financial institutions will need to track and report all this new transaction activity to the IRS. That could drive up their costs and possibly result in more fees being passed along to customers. The fact that raw data exists somewhere in the system does not mean it's easily compiled or produced, stated a letter sent to a congressional leader by the Consumer Bankers Association, the American Bankers Association, and nearly 40 other financial industry groups. Privacy concerns are one of the key criticisms of the proposal, especially if they resulted from a data breach. It doesn't help that the White House case that a recent leak exposed income tax information for 25 of the wealthiest Americans. Details of their personal records were obtained and disclosed by ProPublica. Yeah, fuck the rich. This proposal would create significant operational and reputational challenges for financial institutions, increase tax preparation costs for individuals and small businesses, and create serious financial privacy concerns, stated the letter from the banking and industry groups. It would create tremendous liability for all affected parties by requiring the collection of financial information for nearly every American without proper explanation of how the IRS will store, protect, and use this enormous trove of personal financial information. Banks and credit unions contend they will need to hire extra staff to help consumers and their tax professionals understand the reports about and how the IRS might use them. Surveys have indicated that some unbanked people cite suspicions of banks or the government as reasons they do without checking or savings account. The proposal, if enacted, wouldn't help in that regard. Unbanked individuals typically must rely on check cashing and other high-cost options to meet some of their financial needs and often can't qualify for mortgages or other mainstream loans. This proposal would almost certainly undermine efforts to reach vulnerable populations and unbanked households. Still, it doesn't seem likely that many existing bank or credit union customers would exit the financial mainstream if the proposal is enacted. It's the difference between what the IRS collects on behalf of the government and what the agency estimates that all taxpayers legally owe. About 15% of the money owed the federal government isn't collected, according to Natasha Sarin, Deputy Assistant Secretary at the Treasury Department. In addition to shortchanging the government, proponents say the tax gap points to a basic question of fairness. Today's tax code contains two sets of rules, wrote Sarin in the summary. One for regular wage and salary workers who report virtually all of the income they earn, and another for wealthy taxpayers who are often able to avoid a large share of the taxes they owe. The White House would like to boost the IRS budget by around $80 billion over the next 10 years, with the increased funding used to hire more staff, invest in technology upgrades, and pursue other objectives aimed at raising government revenue and narrowing the tax gap. Just knowing the IRS would have access to some bank account details might convince more taxpayers to pay what they owe. There's a direct relationship between the information the IRS has at its disposal and a taxpayer's voluntary compliance rate, Sarin said. Sarin's letter indicated the $600 account reporting proposal, if enacted, might help the IRS bring in $460 billion over the next decade, in addition to $320 billion over the next decade from staffing increases and other enforcement measures. IRS audit rates in recent years have been falling steadily to just 0.5% in 2020, or 1 in 200 individual taxpayers. If the bank transaction rule is enacted, IRS auditors could be in position to ask more informed questions during examinations. Sarin's letter indicated the White House would like to see audit rates rise among affluent households earning $400,000. Households.
Amongst affluent assholes. That was a great Freudian slip.
Affluent households earning $400,000 and up, but not for people below that threshold. So this is kind of interesting. But you know what? I don't trust the government to keep the shit safe. I don't really trust the banks to keep the shit safe either, to be honest with you. $600 seems like way too low.
They're trying to fund all the infrastructure bill and all these other programs, and they're looking for any way they can do it.
But there's a better way to do it. There's a better way, because they're saying they're not getting what's owed. There was a president not too long ago, a mild-mannered chap. 2-3 chins. Donald Trump, who ran on closing the tax loopholes. He did not do that. He instead cut taxes. He ran on tax reform. I'd like to see the Democrats do something like that. Now, I know everybody's squeamish about that shit, but if you want to get the money, get it from the rich and the corporations that have the money, but don't pay. Amazon doesn't pay any corporate tax. It makes no sense. GE doesn't pay any corporate tax. Stop trying to get my personal information and get it from where you know it is. You know they owe the money. This isn't about raising a tax rate. They owe the money under the current tax rate. Figure that shit out. If you need to hire more people to do that, I'm all for it. This is $600 is way too low for the government to be poking around in everybody's business. So are the ultra rich just going to open up a bunch of accounts for $599? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, it's basic intrusion. And basically what happens is it's like everything else. That's the whole thing with the tax the rich. I mean, they'll find tax shelters and stuff like that. That's what happened basically with Roosevelt. He had all the tax rates, all the people that were affluent had money. He found tax shelters, and what happened is this is how the start of the regular middle class started to get taxed. For them to say $600, you know, $600 bank account, you know, bank account transaction, that's infiltrating the middle class. It's blatant, and they've got all these entitlement programs that the Democrats want to push through, and this is a way to fund them.
It's a way, but they can fund it through for tax money that's out there that hasn't been collected. I'm just saying they're not doing it the right way. Now, what they said with the $10,000 is like, well, we already have the infrastructure for that because we do that for money laundering. Okay. I still think that's kind of a low number. You know, $10,000, your average person has $10,000. Not your average person. Middle class people have $10,000. Middle class people, plenty of lower class people, less wealthy people do not have that. But at least you already have the infrastructure in place for that. But again, I say close the fucking loopholes. Go after the big corporations. Go after these offshore accounts. You know where they're hiding the money. Suppose like there's a big tag, like when the thing with the rich came out a couple weeks ago, they have a bunch of money like one of the Dakotas. There's a tax shelter in the Dakotas. Get the money there. The money, it's our money. It's owed to us. Get it there. Now, I do agree with the thing where they say, well, if they know the IRS has access to your bank records, you might pay what you're supposed to pay. I do agree with that. I'm not saying I support the decision, but it's like, fuck, I can't get it. I can't. There's only so much I can do to get around it. They have access to my records.
That's not worth it. That concession's not worth it. To have that, you know, to have that.
No, it's not. No, it's not worth it. No, I agree. It's not. Listen, I've been audited. I was audited a couple years ago. It's a pain in the ass. But it's not really, at least in my experience, because I'm a nobody. It wasn't like that hardcore. I had to give them like a year's worth of stuff, like travel, this, that, the other thing. You know, so you play ball, you give them what they're looking for, and you move on. But for other people, it might be a lot harder. Listen, we should get the tax money we're owed. We should get the tax, but this is not the way to do it. And if I was the Republicans, I would be bringing this shit up all the time. But they're not doing that. The Republicans are trying to suck Trump's teat, and the Democrats are too incompetent to get shit passed that the country wants to get passed. This is my problem with the two parties. Here's the synopsis of the Republicans and the Democrats real quick. The Republicans are so good at being in power that they ram through shit most of the country doesn't want. The Democrats are so bad at being in power that they can't pass shit that most of the country does want. This is the government we have. These are our two choices. It's fucking awful. It's fucking awful.
Either side doesn't get it. You know, they don't get it. We talked about stuff that the other, you know, each side does. That it's like I can't believe you're that stupid and that you don't realize this, that, and the other thing. And to put, and like, look, just because we're doing the topic right now, okay? But the Biden plan to have $600, you'd be expecting everybody to sit there and go, oh, that seems fair. It's such a blatant. A blatant cash grab for that,
yeah.
You know,
it's not a good look.
Entitlement project.
It's, listen, the problem with the Democrats is we're trying to pass this $3.5 trillion thing, instead of saying what's actually in the thing where they've done polls and people like it, pre-K for all, paid parental leave. Talk about the shit people actually like about the thing, but they're so bad at this stuff, they talk about the money, and the Republicans don't have to jump on board right now because the Democrats are sabotaging themselves, but yeah, if I was a Republican, I'd be see? Big government Democrats. Typical overreach of the Democrats. You give them an inch, they want to take a mile.
Yeah, and I would be ripping the infrastructure bill apart. I mean, you brought up two things that are in the infrastructure bill that has nothing to do with infrastructure. Make a separate bill for that.
Well, they are. It's under the reconciliation. It's under reconciliation. They're not good at marketing it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And also with the thing, I mean, Biden is going, well, all this is going to be good union jobs, which is going to be tax over. It's going to be overruns, and this is going to be billions more than what the price tag is going to be.
Well, that's everything. That's everything. They all do that. I mean, listen, Mexico is going to pay for a wall. I mean, they all lie about shit. So I told you the Democrats were going to be no better with this shit when they got in power. I said, enjoy it now, because that's why they blow my mind. You were right when you said both sides don't fucking get it. They're so bad. They're so bad at this shit. All they care about is staying in power, that they run to the lowest common denominator instead of actually doing good governance. And then then people go, you know what? They did a good job. If they pass these bills, a lot of the stuff that's in there, people will like. It will be happy when they see their roads are fixed, when they see that they could take off work for a period of months and still get paid to take care of their new baby. People will like that shit. Nobody wants to hear $3.5 trillion. What is wrong with you?
Ugh. Basically, you have each bill in it. I would say that no piece of legislation for a bill should be more than 50 pages. So every politician, a senator or a congressman, are required to read it before they vote on it.
They don't read this
yes.
shit. They don't read
yes.
this shit. Why would they read
because
it? They're bought.
Thing is 7,000 pages. You make it no more. You make a law that it's no more than 50 pages, and everybody has to read it before they vote on it.
They're not. How are you going to enforce that? At gunpoint? They're not interested in governing. Neither side is interested in governing. They're interested in power. It's just how they use it. The Republicans happen to be much better at using the power they have, which is always the problem with the Democrats. The Democrats trip over their dick. The Democrats have the ideas that in polls the majority of the people like, but they can't execute it because they're a bunch of fucking morons. I'll tell you right now, Joe Biden needs to call up Donald Trump and go, listen, pal, you might be president in 3 years. Who knows? But right now I'm president. I still have a Twitter account. Can you tell me how to do those mean tweets? I got to get Manchin and Sinema in line. I mean, this shit would not happen under the Republicans. Donald Trump would come up with a pithy little nickname, or a not-so-pithy nickname, and send out a fucking mean tweet, and the senators would get in line. But no, but Joe Biden hemming and hawing, having Jell-O, enough with this shit. Get it done.
but it's just, like I said, you and I have had this discussion, and we've agreed on it for years, that the infrastructure needs to be attended to.
Absolutely.
I've said like a fucking broken record zillions of times. We grabbed business leaders and said, what's the biggest thing to get America, making America more enterprise, more on a world stage of production and stuff like that? They said, they got to fix the infrastructure. We're going to fix the infrastructure. The packet was so much shit that has nothing to do with the infrastructure. And I said, well, fine, put it in a separate bill, but keep it at the infrastructure, make concessions on it. Maybe if there's a union, if there's a project in a certain area where there's not a union, then a non-union job could bid on it and stuff like that. Make it like that to get it done. It's a common sense thing, but they have no fucking common sense.
Well, listen, nobody passes a stripped-down bill. No, nobody, neither side does it. They put a bunch of other stuff in it. The only way the Democrats, the liberal Democrats want a lot more stuff in it than others don't. Manchin doesn't want anything, for global warming. He's like, fuck, I'm from West Virginia. We need more dead dinosaur fuel. So, I mean, the Democrats better pass something, and they will. Because if they want to try to retain the House in 2022, you're going to have to show you did something. with this. You're going to have to show, yeah, because you certainly don't have the personality and the charisma to pull it off with smoke and mirrors. So you're going to have to be have to run on something. But whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
So we all agree that though we don't want tax cheats, this is not the best way to do it.
It's intrusive. No, they can't do it.
Well, they can.
And they fucked up for having such a low. We're going to tax the rent. Well, you know, I'm poor as a fucking church mouse. $600 is in my range. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, their argument would be, well, we're going after the money that you should be paying us. That would be their argument. Whatever.
Oh, horse shit. When you have so many loopholes and so many tax dodges for the rich, and then they make the threshold for this $600, fuck you. You're coming for the middle class.
Yeah,
you know it.
They're coming straight for the middle
class. They're not coming for the middle class. The middle class. They're coming for the lower class. The lower economic
class. Mid to lower, yeah. No, it's too low of a threshold.
Let's say a guy, you know, he's working three jobs and stuff like that. And on that third job that his side hustle, let's say he worked, a Friday, a Friday night, Saturday, and a Sunday doing a plumbing job or a fence job, something like that, and he makes $600. Guy's trying to get ahead. Meanwhile, the IRS is sticking out. Oh, what's this all about? It's me trying to put food on my table, you motherfucker.
Right.
All right, let's move on. None of see, Joe, I sink my fangs into Biden proposals. It's not just Trump's policy I fucking couldn't stand. Biden's got shit I can't stand too. What? What?
Finally seeing the light.
No, I've always been. I tell you, man, I've always been the same.
Let me tell you something. You said going in that I'm going to be as critical of Biden as I was of Trump. So you're holding steady to that. So I do commend you on that.
Well, thank you. Like I said,
calling him to task.
I have not changed. It's the batshit crazy that is our political system that has changed. I'm the same person.
I cannot sit here and go, oh, is it giving him a pass? No. You're holding his feet to the fire. So no, on it, you know, fair is fair.
All right, let's. We're just going to have that play in the background. Joe, you got to make me a shorter version of that. That is a 4.5-minute version. That way, I need like a 20-second of just the chorus of the Scambusters.
Well, that's Scambusters the opera.
I like the way you blame me.
No, 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 I'm not blaming you. No, there was a time. I'm happy with it. But I'm saying now as the show has evolved, a little 15 to 20 minute little stinger of that would probably serve us better.
I just did what the boss told me to do.
All right. I'm not blaming you. I'm just there's new marching instructions. We're adapting. All right. So we are bringing up Craig Grant. Were you guys surprised to see Craig Grant on the show prep list?
Let me tell you something. I was reading the story and I'm like, who the hell is Craig Grant? I go, but why does he sound familiar? And then I'm like, oh, that.
All right. The synopsis of Craig Grant: a long time ago, Juliana Avalos had her pictures stolen by various scammers, one of whom attempted to scam me. She claimed to be the maiden in distress and sued Match.com. Unfortunately, I found evidence that she was working with scammers and actively scamming people, too. Her boyfriend, Craig Grant, was in on it and bragging about it. And then after that thing all fell apart when I went to the media with it, then they moved on to a cryptocurrency scam. They were a Ponzi scheme.
By the way, I don't mean to cut you off, but before you meet, how much did you cost them, my friend?
What did it get up to? $4.5 billion lawsuit at one point?
Yes.
No, we could have built a couple bridges and tunnels with that money.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm giving the real short version of that, of this story. I would say it's on the website. So it is on the website, but I don't have all the pictures and screenshots. It's forever being fixed. Whatever. But if you want to go to davincomedy.com, look under Juliana and Craig, and you'll get the bones of what happened. So then they moved on to BitConnect. BitConnect was a cryptocurrency that they were promoting as a Ponzi scheme. You know, it was a multi-level marketing. Is that what they call it? Multi-level marketing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they were promoting that, and that all came crashing down when the SEC shut them down. Craig Grant was one of their biggest promoters. He was all over social media, YouTube a lot, promoting it, and Juliana was promoting it too, and they were living high on the hog. I actually got several emails from people thanking them for putting all the research I had done on the website because they were going to invest with Craig, and then they saw all the research that was done, and they did not invest with Craig. So the other day I was like, I wonder what's going on with this. I haven't heard much about it in a while, so I decided to see what's going on. So this is that. So that's really short who Craig Grant is. Craig Grant is a scammer for years that we've made their lives harder. Craig and Juliana, we have fucked up their game.
Yes.
So the Security and Exchange Commission has filed a civil lawsuit against five people accused of promoting BitConnect, a now-defunct cryptocurrency Ponzi scheme. The regulator contends that the platform's lending program constituted a $2 billion unregistered securities offering since the firm wasn't a registered broker-dealer. BitConnect first debuted in 2016 and shuttered its primary lending platform in early 2018 amid allegations of fraud and warnings from regulators. The FBI publicly sought out potential BitConnect victims in 2019. Now the SEC is holding Trayvon Brown, these are the promoters that I'm listing, Craig Grant, who are the aforementioned, Ryan Mason, and Michael Noble to account for their alleged advertisement of the merits of the platform's lending program. They created YouTube videos touting their success using the platform to solicit investor funds per the SEC complaint and received commissions for their efforts. Joshua Jepson is also a defendant in the case for his alleged role as a liaison between BitConnect and its promoters. Jepson represented BitConnect at events. The SEC's complaint charges the promoter defendant with violating the registration provisions of the federal security laws and Jepson with aiding and abetting BitConnect's unregistered offer and sale of security, said a regulator in a statement. The lawsuit was filed in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. The agency is seeking injunctive relief, disgorgement, plus interest and civil penalties. So this is not a criminal lawsuit. They are not talking about jail time here.
I'm sorry. Did you say disgorgement?
How did
I miss this?
I did. We allege that these
defendants... like something a boar would do to a zebra.
Okay. We allege that these defendants unlawfully sold unregistered digital asset securities by actively promoting the BitConnect lending program to retail investors. Lara Shayla Mirabin, Associate Regional Director of the SEC's New York Regional Office, said in a statement, "We will seek to hold accountable those who illegally profit by capitalizing on the public's interest in digital assets." So the promoters received referral commissions initially ranged between 0.2% and 7% and later ranged between 2% and maximum 5%. BitConnect also awarded its top promoters, including Brown, Grant, Mason, and Noble, who are among BitConnect's most successful promoters in the United States, an additional sales commission it called development funds. The development funds were paid weekly and were calculated as a certain percentage of a new loans made during the week by certain investors, typically those recruited by the individual promoter or by investors that the individual promoter's investors had recruited, hence the Ponzi scheme. Brown obtained at least $480,000, Grant over $1.3 million, Mason over $475,000, and Noble over $730,000 as referral commissions and development funds from promoting and touting investments into BitConnect's lending programs to retail investors.
I got to tell you something. It's kind of nice to see he's not resting on his laurels.
He's a hard worker. That's the thing about scammers. There's no sleep in the scam game. You got to keep moving to the next hustle. At the end of an investor's chosen lockup period, BitConnect displayed a supposed credit to the investor's BitConnect account on the BitConnect website. The interest payments and principal were prepared as U.S. dollar amounts, although BitConnect's website did not allow investors to withdraw funds, including supposed investment returns in U.S. dollars. There's a red flag. Instead, to cash out interest or principal on a lending program investment, an investor had to request that BitConnect convert the value displayed in U.S. dollars backed into BitConnect, BCC tokens, BitConnect tokens, which the investor then had to purportedly sell for Bitcoin on the BitConnect exchange. So you got you can't get US dollar, you got to get it into BitConnect, and then you can get it into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
And then finally, investors would request a BitConnect send the Bitcoin to the investor's chosen address on the Bitcoin blockchain. Grant had at least 4,000 investors in his downline, so he got about 4,000 people in the, under his little umbrella. They would give him a code, so you would use Craig Grant. He would say, "Use my code to sign up." So you would use Craig Grant's code, and that's how they kept track. Like most of these Ponzi schemes, Grant received a Rolex and a yacht cruise for his efforts as a promoter. I saw the videos from the yacht cruise.
You saw them?
Oh yeah. Well, like that maniac fucking posts everything. From April 2017 through January 2018, Grant raised millions of dollars for BitConnect through his sales of investments in BitConnect lending program to investors based on the sales in his downline. During that same period, Grant earned at least $1,356,859 from BitConnect referral commissions and development funds.
You know what's a sad thing on how soulless these two are? You're going on a yacht cruise. You're sitting on the yacht. It's a beautiful night. The sun is going down. You're sitting there with a pina colada, sitting on a deck chair, watching the sun go down on this yacht. Does it ever cross your mind that you're fucking people over with their life savings or at least a lot of money?
No.
And not even have an issue or an ounce of guilt about it?
No.
Would it bother you?
We've dealt with these people. Where did I lose you? Where you thought they were good people?
I know, it's just amazing where you could go on a yacht crew knowing that you're hosing these people and not have one iota of guilt
because they're criminals. Because they're criminals, Joe. That's what criminals do.
I know.
Okay.
They're sociopaths.
The top,
like when I would chase down the hit and run guy. And he just walked calmly to this getaway car, whatever, and the cop goes, yeah, because he's a crook.
Yeah.
Good point.
He understands the criminal element.
Right.
Yep.
The top U.S. securities regulator on Wednesday sued the founder of the now-defunct cryptocurrency exchange platform BitConnect over his alleged role in fraudulently raising about $2 billion from retail investors. Expanding a civil case announced in May, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission charged BitConnect founder Satish Kumbani, an Indian citizen, with illegally touting BitConnect's unregistered offering from January 2017 to January 2018. It also charged the promoter Glenn Acaro, and that was who was above Craig and Trayvon, Glenn Acaro, and his firm Future Money Limited with fraud, saying they received more than $24 million in referral commissions and development funds while promoting BitConnect from August 2017 to January 2018. That's like a quarter. That's like a third of the year. That's a third of the year.
Yeah.
$24 million, these scumbags. The SEC is seeking fines, the recouping of ill-gotten gains, and other relief in its lawsuit in Manhattan federal court. Found in 2016, BitConnect created a digital token called BitConnect Coin that could be exchanged for Bitcoin, the popular cryptocurrency. The SEC said investors in BitConnect lending program were told BitConnect would use a volatility software trading bot that could generate returns of 40% per month and were given fictitious returns showing gains of about 3,700% per year. That's what they would talk about. I watched enough of Craig's videos. Like this trading bot, this software that they invented where you're guaranteed to get the money. Well, if you're guaranteed to get the money, why do you need my fucking money? You're doing so good. Why do you need more? Don't you hog it to yourself?
Yeah.
Do it for yourself. I just love that BitConnect bites the dust.
Well, it's bit for a while. The dust.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, the SEC said BitConnect investors lost much of their money after the price of BitConnect coin sank 92% on January 16, 2018. That's a bad day.
Yeah.
The SEC said Kumbani, 35, has lived in Surat, India, but his whereabouts are unknown, while the 44-year-old Acaro lives in Moore Park, California, and Incorporated Future Money in Hong Kong. Efforts to locate Kumbani were unsuccessful. Lawyer for Acaro and Future Money did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The SEC had, on May 28, filed a related lawsuit against five other BitConnect promoters, I just told you. It has obtained judgments requiring two promoters, Michael Noble and Joshua Jepson, and Jepson's fiancée, to pay more than $3.5 million at 190 90 Bitcoin. The other three promoters, including Craig, have not responded to the lawsuit or have not been served, court records show. Now, I did a little bit of my own research. Not too difficult, this research. Not. Craig has been in Jamaica since at least the beginning of August. He last appeared on a video in the USA in the beginning of June. Remember, the lawsuit was filed at the end of May. His longtime girlfriend, Juliana Avalos, is still in Florida working at her bounce house business. And now,
just curious how the bounce house business is going.
She's hard at it, my friend, and she's hired help.
It's hopping.
Now, here's the interesting thing. Jamaica and the United States do have an extradition treaty. So this fucking moron is still posting videos of himself every day. Still posting videos. I mean, it's just a matter of time till they're going to get around to it. It's just a matter of time. I mean, maybe they can't go after Avalos because they never had a wedding ceremony. But, I mean, they have kids together. I don't know what property they have. But, I mean, it's just a matter of time. If they want this, he cannot come back here. He can't come back here. And
we always said they were sneaky. We never said they were bright.
No! They're not even sneaky! That's clear. You're not sneaky when you're posting
your
shit on YouTube.
You're on a video.
When you're posting it.
I mean,
so stupid.
He's fixing up what he claims is his grandmother's house in Jamaica. It's out in the fucking jungle. So I guess he figures he's untouchable there. But I mean,
maybe.
If the government gets around to, I mean, at some point they're going to go, ah, this motherfucker. Because if I saw the YouTube videos, you know they saw the YouTube videos.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. I'm probably like, I don't believe this guy, you know?
So I just thought it's interesting. I'm glad these guys are getting their comeuppance. It looks like Avalos, who was promoting it too, isn't going to get really caught up in this shit. But I'm assuming they do have shared assets. So
yeah, I'm sure.
But they would probably seize assets, but do you think they would indict her as a accessory?
Hasn't happened yet. I'm just looking forward to the government auction of a princess bounce house. I'm going to sneak in there and buy that shit on the cheap.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I mean,
this is awesome.
It's kind of, so, I mean, that's the only that's the reason he must be in Jamaica without her. You know, that has to, why would you go to fucking Jamaica all the time? I know he's got family in Jamaica and they've been in Jamaica before, but as soon as the fucking lawsuit hits, you're like, peace out. All right. So.
No, you know, he must be under the assumption that if he goes, that in Jamaica, that they're going to be, that the law is sketchy enough that they're not going to go and actually go arrest him for extradition. I don't know what it's like, but I mean, maybe it's not worth the law enforcement down there's while to do that. I don't know.
They're going after him for at least $1.3 million. I'm sure they're, but there's also penalties on top of that shit and interest and everything. He's probably going to be in the hole a couple million dollars, several million dollars by the time this is all done. I don't know if he comprehends that, but I mean, he's lucky he's not facing jail time.
Who was his lawyer on the Match.com case? Maybe he could swing in and save the day.
That's funny. I got to find those fucking emails.
Oh yeah.
What was that, Spencer?
Oh.
What was that, Spencer? Something?
That's probably who's advising him.
Yes.
Go to Jamaica. He can't do anything there.
Part of the name was Spencer.
What? He was.
One of the things is that he's so dopey that he's always been really forward and making all these videos of himself doing all these scams. He's just like, you know, it's me. I'm the crook. I'm right here. He's been doing this for years.
Well, I mean, honestly, I did all the legwork, but I mean, the shit, if you did the digging, you could find the shit I found, a lot of it. Now, people did come to me later on, and I did get stuff that wasn't out there, but initially, I just went down the rabbit hole. That's really what, so if I'm doing it for free, you know the feds are doing it.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, he should be watching Goodfellas, because he'd see after all the Fonza heist, when he had the party, take that fuck cut off. I told you not to get anything. What you
doing?
Get out of the car, you
know? So that's that. Were you happy? Were you happy to have a cameo from our old pal?
Yeah,
I love it.
You know, when I originally saw it in the prep, I thought it was going back to that scammer. And I'm like, oh, maybe it was that. And then I'm looking at the name. I go, why does that name look familiar? I go, I know this guy. Yeah, he's at it again.
Yeah. All right. So that's that. Like I said, you go to davincomedy.com. A lot of the stuff is up there under Craig and Juliana. I just don't have the images up there right now. Hopefully soon. Been efforting that for a couple of years. It went down. It's a whole fucking thing. But if you go on the Wayback Machine and look up Davin Comedy, if you go on the Wayback Machine, it might be there from like 2018, 2019. You could find a lot of shit on the internet.
And we have an extension, and also like and on that we have that extensive section pretty much dedicated to that, a full section on the page.
All right, let's move on to the Rolling Stones. A little controversy, which I didn't even know was a controversy. But the Rolling Stones retired one of their most popular rock songs due to lyrics that depict the horrors of slavery. The Stones have not played the 1971 hit Brown Sugar on their current tour and said the blues classic has been removed from their set list. I heard the song. It doesn't really sound like a blues song. I'm actually going to play part of the song in a little bit because I think it's important to hear the song. You picked up on that, huh? Keith Richards, 77, responded to the LA Times when asked if the Stones had cut the second most performed tune in their catalog amid a climate of heightened cultural sensitivity. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what the sisters quite where the beef is. Didn't they understand this was a song about the horrors of slavery? But they're trying to bury it. The first verse of the hit song depicts slaves being sold and beaten in Louisiana with references to a slaver who whips women just around midnight. Well, he's got to be punctual. The famous chorus portrays a non-consensual sex encounter between a violent master and a young female slave while possibly alluding to heroin use. In the next verse, the song describes the abuse suffered by slaves on a plantation. Lead singer Mick Jagger ends the tune by singing, "How come you taste so good, just like a black girl should?" We've played Brown Sugar every night since 1970, Richard told the newspaper. So sometimes you think, we take that one out for now and see how it goes. We might put it back in. The Stones have played the song live 1,136 times, second only to Jumpin' Jack Flash, according to setlist.fm. At the moment, I don't want to get into conflicts with all this shit, Richard said, of criticism of the song, but I'm hoping that we'll be able to resurrect the babe in her glory somewhere along the track. The Stones were five shows into their, ironically, named No Filter Tour Wednesday. Well, apparently there are some filters. The concerts marked the septuagenarian's first gig since 2019, the first performance without drummer Charlie Watts, who died in August at the age of 80. Jagger is clearly not singing the song in the first person, but the danceable tune has slammed in recent years, with some critics dubbing it stunningly crude and offensive. Other commentators have conceded it's gross, sexist, and stunningly offensive, but still rocking. Okay. I never would write that song now, Jagger told Rolling Stone in 1995. I'd probably censor myself. I think, oh God, I can't. I've got to stop. I just can't write raw like that. Let me read you the lyrics of the song. I will not attempt to sing them. But let me, because people should hear what the song is, what all the hubbub is about. Gold Coast slave ship bound for cotton fields, sold to the market down in New Orleans. Scarred old slaver knows he's doing all right. Hear him whip the women just around midnight. Brown sugar, how come you taste so good? Uh-huh. Brown sugar, just like a young girl should. Uh-huh. Oh. Drums beating, cold English, blood runs hot. Lady of the house, wondering when it's going to stop. Houseboy knows that he's doing all right. You should have heard him just around midnight. Brown sugar, how come you taste so good? Brown sugar, just like a young girl should now. Yeah. Ah, get on. Brown sugar, how come you taste so good? Got me craving the brown sugar just like a black girl should, yeah. And I bet your mama was a tent show queen and all her boyfriends were sweet 16. I'm no schoolboy, but I know what I like. You should have heard me just around midnight. Brown sugar, how come you taste so good, baby? Come on down, brown sugar, just like a young girl should, yeah. I said, yeah, 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 woo! How come you taste so good? Yeah, yeah, woo! Just like a black girl should, yeah, 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 woo! All right, let me play a little bit of this song.
Let me tell you something. You just did that tune like we used to sing it during the third set, wanting to go home.
I said I wasn't going to sing it.
You've been there. That the third set about 2:30 at night. Last tune is like we're going to put that enthusiasm.
Did you really want me to try to sing like Mick Jagger? Did you think that would help the show? Stop it now. I know my limitations. Yeah. I know. All right. So here's the song.
Thank you.
All right. All right. I mean, you get the gist of the tune. All right. So I did a poll. Here's the poll. The Rolling Stones retired their song Brown Sugar due to lyrics that depict the horrors of slavery. They might bring it back in the future. Should the Stones play Brown Sugar? 66.7% said yes. 33.3% said no. This was Joe's blog, so I will let Joe have the first crack at this.
Yeah, basically what it is, they should still play this song. I think that they're just kowtowing to the cancel culture. The song is describing the abuse of slaves. It's not pro-abuse of a slave. It's just describing that. So it's like, well, you should take it out of the set list. No, there's other songs that they've done that were controversial, which is in the set list. Street Fighting Man is one of them. It was released in the United States during the 1968 Democratic National Convention, where there was riots. And basically, it was very controversial. Radio stations wouldn't play it. That's in the set list. Let's Spend the Night Together is in the set list. He had to do it on the Ed Sullivan Show. He had to change the lyrics on that. Honky Tonk Woman was too scandalous to be performed in China. China deemed it scandalous. In 2014, going back to 2014, Satisfaction was another song. It was released in 1965. Certain cities banned it on radio, even though the vocals were tensioned very low in the mix. And it couldn't get airplay because they were trying to, the lyrics were trying to make some girl in there. Gimme Shelter. The lyrics include rape, murder. It's just a kiss away. A majority of Stone songs are controversial. I feel like they're kowtowing, and the fans are getting gypped because there's a song that was popular that it was a great tune that they're not doing. It's just another effect of the cancel culture permeating its way into our entertainment, and it's going to get to the point where going from, and I say it in the set, I preface it in the blog, it's going to be a point of pushback when it goes from entertainers doing a concert, comics doing a show, to somebody saying something by the coffee machine at work, and somebody feels it's offensive to get rid of. Then, and then only, will there start to be pushback. And it's going to come. It's going to come soon enough.
All right. First of all, I never listened to the song. I listened to some Stones song. I'm not a huge Stones fan, so I never listened to it. So I'm the wrong one to go. But I didn't know what the song was about. It just immediately went off when it came with me. But I was looking at the comments on YouTube videos, and it seems like the vast majority of their fans had no idea what this song was about. Did you guys know what this song was about?
I had an idea. Yeah.
Okay, so Joe had an idea, Pip did not.
I knew it was about black girls, and because it was Brown Sugar, I read someplace that was a reference to heroin. I did not hear these words about whipping and the houseboy, and I didn't know it was sold in the market down in New Orleans. I didn't pay any attention to any of this, and I was like, wait, what? The song's about slavery, what? I had no idea. None.
So a lot of the fans thought heroin was a popular thing, and it even mentioned in the article. And a lot of other fans point out that this came out around the time when Mick Jagger was dating a black model. I don't know if he married her, but I think they had a child together. So they thought
they
didn't
marry, but they did have a child together, Trisha Hunt.
So they thought it was about her, which, again, if you put it in that mindset, okay, not a big deal. Now, I will say, first of all, before this article, I had not heard a clamoring whatsoever for anybody to cancel this song. I had not heard people saying, they must not play Brown Sugar. This was the first I heard when I read this article. So part of me thinks this might be contrived just to get a little press for this No Filter tour now that the drummer's dead.
It seems to be self-imposed by them.
Well, that's another interesting thing. It seems like Keith Richards wants to play it, but it seems like Mick Jagger, as early as 1995, was like, whoa, maybe I shouldn't have written this one. Like, Mick just seems uncomfortable. In 1995, Mick Jagger seemed uncomfortable with this song, let alone what's going on now. Now, in 1995, I think we were right after the Rodney, was that around the Rodney King time?
Around there, yes.
So race was
could have been, I don't know.
Race was percolating around then too. Here's the thing that, like, I don't, if they want to play the song, play the song. I think as far as fans go, some fans will go, oh, I want to hear them play that song. Other fans, like myself, who've seen a band a bunch of times, go, all right, so you don't play this song. I'll get to hear something you rarely play, and I'll just be as happy. So I think it'll be divided kind of that way. Here's a disturbing aspect of this song for me, and it's really kind of haunting. It's not the lyrics or the subject matter. It's the lyrics and the subject matter in contrast to the music. It seems like it's a very upbeat song. It's like a very danceable song. So it seems like you're celebrating this. And I don't know what was in Mix and Keith's head when they wrote the song. I have no idea. But if you hear that song with the lyrics and they're going, woo, and yeah, it seems like a celebration of what was happening. It doesn't seem like they're like wagging their finger at the horrors of slavery. It seems like a celebration. I'm not saying they are, but just as to me, a listener who's not invested in this song, who's not a Rolling Stones fan per se, it's very fucking disturbing. That being said, it's art, which makes it kind of interesting, but It kind of affects me in a very negative way. Well, now I know what the lyrics are, combined with that upbeat, danceable, woo, yeah, it's kind of like, ew, it kind of gives me the willies.
I was disturbed about it, like, more years ago when I was just, I just felt, like, kind of oogie about, like, the whole idea that they're singing specifically to young black girls. Like, it just felt predatory.
It's very predatory.
I had no idea it had to do with slavery. And now it's just like, oh, I'm really sorry I know that.
Well, I'll give you an example. There's another very popular song. I don't know if there's other popular slavery songs, but there's another very popular song about rape and incest. Janie's Got a Gun by Aerosmith. That is not a danceable track. That is a dark track. It was a very popular song, but it was a dark track, and they made the video about for that song then, and they spoke about it. So you knew exactly where the band's mindset was when they came out with this unspeakable, horrible crime, this unspeakable experience. You go, okay, this is what they were going for. I still have not really heard what Mick and Keith were thinking when they wrote it. It might be out there somewhere, but I've never seen it cited. You know, if they had said, listen, we're talking about the horrors of slavery and what these people went through, when they were promoting the song, you'd go, no, this is what they meant by it. But we don't have that, which makes it kind of even more creepy.
Yeah, well, you got to understand, the song was written in 1970, okay? And basically what they did was they wanted to put a story together. Sometimes you write, you know, you put a story together, and this was about a slave owner that raped black women. And they were telling about the horror.
It wasn't just the slave owner, though. They had another one. Then you go through the verses. There's one where this black woman is essentially like a tent show entertainer. You know, she's not there by her own will. And basically her job is to sleep with young boys, I guess, so they can lose their virginity. And then again, you get the woos and the yes and it tastes like a brown girl. It's a disturbing song. Again, I'm not saying they need to stop playing it, because it is art and they can play it if they want to. It doesn't make a difference to me. But I am saying it is definitely one of the most disturbing songs I've ever heard, just because of the contrast of the music that accompanies it. It's not a dark tune.
Yeah, no,
it was.
They don't exactly sound con. Yeah,
you got to remember something here. The song was written in 1970, and at the time, it was basically, you know, the big thing of the counterculture, where the Stones were in that whole thing, Woodstock and the counterculture and love and freedom and understanding. So to write that song,
this sounds like none of that, Joe. This sounds like none of those things.
But it was a time of free expression and expressing yourselves, and that's the way the music was back then. Where you would put something in there, and it was the Stones. You know,
it was. I don't know about the love and the like, you know, that kind of hippie part of it. But there was definitely a lot about starting to break taboos and talk about things that people didn't talk about. I think that it's not that they discuss it or they're singing about it. It's just like, now it brings to mind, oh, they're singing about it, and it's kind of like with a wink, like, oh, how naughty the slave owner was raping his slaves. It's like, yeah, if you listen to any shows about, like, DNA and the DNA particularly of Black Americans and how much of their DNA has been contributed to by rape of slaves. It's really a disturbing thing that happened in our country's history. And no. Just knowing that, listening to the song, I'm like, ew.
Now, I wonder if any rap groups are not going to do some of their songs that are misogynistic.
We're not talking about misogyny. We're not talking about misogyny. Yeah, there's plenty of that in rap. I'm not talking about
It's the same thing.
It's not the same thing. We are talking about a song. We're talking about a song that seems to celebrate slavery and rape.
It doesn't celebrate it. It tells the story about it.
You can't tell me it doesn't celebrate it. You can't tell me it doesn't. Now hold on, stop. You can't tell me it doesn't celebrate it when he's going woo and yeah, and it has that upbeat thing. I don't have a problem with the story. I'm just saying the music doesn't.
The Rolling Stones in 1970. That was the song there. But you, like I said, but you do have rap music, like I said, that are being played all the time that celebrate, you know, that have the N-word in it, that's misogynistic, that celebrates a gang culture that's killed thousands of Black kids during about that culture.
All right, we're not doing whataboutism. You want to get out of here on time. We're not doing whataboutism. We're talking about this one song.
Divide and separate. It's the same thing. It's, you know, but the one thing, the Stones don't do this, but there's not one single rap group that's not going to do a song that's misogynistic or about, you know.
Well, first of all, there's plenty of rap groups.
Why is he being conscious of that?
Well, Joe, when you actually do some fucking research for the show prep, you can bring it to our attention. We'll cover that story. But since you didn't, I found this fucking story.
I don't have to do research. I hear it in music every day.
You're such a liar. You don't listen to rap. There's no way you listen to rap. There's no way. There's no way you listen to a rap station. Not a chance in hell.
You drive along and you're in a light. You hear the rap music playing, and you know that it's misogynistic. It celebrates a gang culture, and there's not and these rap groups are going and playing this music. And
none of that has to do with the Rolling Stones. None of that has to do with that. I'm not doing whataboutism. We're not doing that. Save that for the other podcast you're going to do later on.
It's a valid point.
Whataboutism is never a valid point. It's when you're out of arguments. It's when you're out of arguments. We're talking about this particular thing.
Why is it? Explain to me why.
Because we're talking about one topic. We're talking about the Rolling Stones' decision to remove this song about slavery, and we're talking about how the words are grim and the music is upbeat, and we don't know what Mick and Keith have never said what they were thinking when they wrote the song. That's what we're talking about.
I understand that, but we're also discussing this. But there also is rap groups that are playing that do, like I said, that celebrate gang culture that's misogynistic, that use the N-word, but they get a pass. Nobody seems to get upset. You know, so it's just,
well, obviously that's not true. You seem to be upset.
It's very self-serving that they do this.
You seem upset.
It doesn't make sense to me. It's just an accountability thing that it should be the same on one side that it is on the other.
All right. First of all, nobody's holding the Rolling Stones accountable. They decided to do this themselves. Nobody ordered the Rolling Stones in the United States not to play this tune. So they're not being held accountable. They decided. Like I said, I never heard of this before. I think this is more of a publicity stunt, if nothing else. That's what I think.
Right. But do you define the topic? Do you feel that disquieting when you have rap groups singing about, you know, misogyny and the N-word and gang violence?
Well, here's the thing. Misogyny and the N-word are not crimes, so I don't care. And rockers have always sung about misogyny, too. I don't care about that. We're talking about a crime. We're talking about, so yes, if a rap group is glorifying rape, I have a problem with that. I would not listen to that if a rap group was glorifying rape. Misogyny? I listen to plenty of music, plenty of rock music from my 80s hair bands. It's all fucking misogynistic. You ever see the videos? You can't get a woman to grind on a fucking Kia. Try. I have. It doesn't happen.
Do you feel that rap groups should be accountable and maybe stop doing that music in their shows?
No, just like I said, the Rolling Stones don't have to be accountable. I said they can play it.
But the Rolling Stones is.
No, I said they can play it. I said I don't care if they play it. This is their decision. Nobody's holding the Rolling Stones' feet to the fire. This is some made-up bullshit. That's what this is. I've not heard anywhere. I can't believe the Rolling Stones are playing Brown Sugar. They still play the tune on the radio. They still play R. Kelly on the radio. They still play Michael Jackson on the radio.
I also think that it's completely not true that rap music has not had their feet held to the fire.
Correct.
About the misogyny, about the violence,
correct,
about the gang talk, because there's been plenty of ink spilled about those,
yes,
topics.
By black people. By black people.
Where have you seen that? I haven't.
Well, you're not.
Oh, my God. You look it up.
Yeah, seriously, look it up. Seriously. Plenty of people. And black leaders. Black leaders of the black community have been at the forefront of saying, we don't like how you're talking about our women. You really need to stop listening to Newsmax or whatever you're listening to. It's been all over the place.
I'm listening to the actual music, what you hear.
Yeah, you can. They have a right to make it. They have a right to make the music.
You don't see any of those artists taking an incentive on that. So
how do you know? I'm sure plenty of artists have pulled songs. I've pulled jokes. I'm sure they've pulled songs. It's just not in this week's topic. Do the fucking research. I'll be happy to talk about it. But this is not something of cancel culture. They decided. They didn't lose any corporate backing. Live Nation didn't say, we're not going to sell your tickets. They decided not to do it. Nobody was talking about this shit. Now we are because they decided to do it. I just said it's a really disturbing song when you contrast the lyrics with the music. And that's and it's art. And I said, that's fine. Art's supposed to get you to feel something. Oh, I feel something. It is gross. It is really gross. And I would have loved if there was an interview with Mick or Keith from back in the day and somebody could find it. I'd love to read it where they talk about what they were writing. Because I honestly don't know why they did it. Because if you listen to the song, it sounds like a celebration of it. You don't add woos and yas when you're talking about somber shit generally. You've never been to a eulogy and goes, yeah, it was horrible the way they died in a double homicide. Woo! Yeah, I mean, there was blood all over the place. Yeah! You never hear that shit.
Except in my head.
Except in your head. Woos and yas are for fun times. Woos and yas are woos and yas are standards in rock music for partying.
It's another thing that they've been doing this for 50 years, but it's just another thing that suddenly it's a problem.
It's not a problem. Nobody said it's a problem. They made it a problem.
They made it an issue.
Yeah, nobody else made it an issue.
They themselves made it an issue.
Nobody was clamoring for this shit. Nobody cares what 80-year-old rock stars are doing across the stage. They're trying to sell tickets and go with the white outrage. Keith Richards doesn't even have a strong answer. Yeah, we won't do it now, but we might bring it back. He's giving himself an out. He knows it's for the bullshit. That's what this is. You know what? Sebastian Bach should have done the same thing with the Slave to the Grind tour. Yeah, you know, we wanted to play the whole album, but the man just wouldn't let us. There was outrage. So now I can only play 3 tracks from Slave to the Grind, even though I advertised the whole album.
No, don't you play that whole album. Don't you do it.
It's made of bullshit.
They're going to apologize for anything. They should apologize for the Some Girls album, which fucking sucked.
That reference is lost on me. That I'm not a Rolling Stones fan. But listen, I never listened to the song before. It was not one of the Stones songs I listened to. It is a gross song. And I'll give you there was another song, Faith No More, Real Thing. That was about rape, and people didn't know, but they said it was about rape, and you hear lyrics go, it's about rape, but there's no woo. Yeah, it is. It's like, it's sad, it happens, it's a shame. It's like, it happens like every day. You know, it's lyrics like that. And this is like a celebration. Again, I'm not saying they have to take it out. It's art. They can leave it in. I don't give a shit. I'm not going to a Rolling Stones concert, whether they play it or they don't play it. But it is a very disturbing song, and it would be really nice to know what Mick and Keith were going for when they wrote the song. It would be really nice.
They were probably talking about the indignity of women that were slaves by an English point of view, which was maybe a little bit differently than the American point of view.
I don't know, man. I'm just saying perhaps you don't have to add the woos and the yes and maybe slow it down a little bit. That's all I'm saying. It's a creepy fucking tune. It might be the creepiest song I've ever heard. And, you know, I've listened to Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, no, there's some definitely creepy songs. I just feel like a little gross now that I know what it's about.
Listen, there's a lot of stuff, you know, about older men and underage women, and we still listen to those songs. There's a lot of rock music about that doesn't hold up well. They still play the tunes as well they can. I don't give a shit. But I'm just saying.
Listen, you know that Steve Winwood's my favorite musician, and Traffic was great, but they had a song called Vagabond Virgin, which was not a very popular tune. Nobody knows it now. But there's a line in there that says, you were barely 13, a child of the villages, so fresh on the scene. Fucking ew!
Yeah.
That means barely 13 means you were 12 years old.
Well, of course he did. He had a topless 13-year-old girl on an album cover.
Yeah, that's blind faith. Yeah, but I'm not trying. No, and he did not have anything to do with writing that song, nor the decision to put that girl on the album cover. I just was.
Listen, I can. No. Look, Billy Idol. Billy Idol, Cradle of Love. Kiss, Christine 16. A winger, she's only 17. I mean, there's a lot of that shit. What's your name? Who's your daddy? Is he rich like me? I mean, that's a Springsteen song, I think. There's a lot.
The funny thing with Winger, we Kip Winger was doing a storyteller, and we actually opened up to him. And I love Winger. I'll admit it. I hung out. And he, you know, before he does the song, he goes, look, he goes, I'm 58 years old. He goes, I feel creepy, but it was a hit, so I gotta sing.
That's fine.
Just to let you know, I do feel creepy singing this fucking song now, but it was a hit. I gotta sing it.
You know what? And I think, first of all, I think this is made up, but I think if Keith and Mick said something to that effect about Brown Sugar, I think if anybody was upset about it, they might feel a little bit better. Kip Winger, he owned it. He goes, listen, this is the deal. It was a different time. I understand now that it's creepy, but it's a hit and people want to hear it. So here we go. That's fine.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing is, there were different times. I know, you know, maybe in hippie times, they were like, oh, yeah, so you're 16, whatever, you're 15, whatever. Well, first of all, let me just back up again and go, 12! Oh, my God! But...
Hey, that's bat mitzvah age. She's a woman.
But the thing is that there is a... In different times, people had different ideas about certain things. And so it's like, yeah, this is how many decades later? So their song has not aged well. That has not aged well. Maybe they were trying to, like, okay, we're going to bring up this topic, but we still want a great song, you know.
Maybe testing the waters, you know. They might have had a meeting, so look, this is one of my most popular songs. Why don't we put something out saying we were going to retire it, and it's offensive. People go, no, we put it in the song, we do the tune, and now we don't feel guilty about it.
Right. Well, you know what? It's like there's different times, there's different thoughts. We've always had, you know, the older guy, the young girl dynamic in art, Lolita, blah, blah, blah. But the thing is that, you know, you get to reexamine things as we move on. And it's like, yeah, maybe we don't want certain things in our culture portrayed that way anymore. And they are the artists. They have the right to, like, cull it if they want to. But there was no clamoring.
Yeah, that's the thing that's annoying. It's completely fakakta. And, like, I would say, you know, what are you guys doing? If you want to play the song, play the song. If you don't want to play the song, don't play the song. You know, Keith could have easily said, listen, we have so many hits. We're just rotating songs in and out. And when you're the Rolling Stones, you do have so many hits. Maybe it's a song they have to play. I get it. Maybe it's like if Aerosmith doesn't play Sweet Emotion. Maybe. But you know what? The artist...
It is. It's the same thing.
But
it's
you know what?
Same thing.
The artist can make whatever set list they want. And you know what? We have to sit there and take it. So that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, they decide that they don't want a set list of slavery and pedo rock. They could change it up.
But like I said, I think the difference between Aerosmith, Janie's Got a Gun, and all the press they did about that, and the video, like, it would have been nice if we had that for Brown Sugar. You go, no, look at the video. You could tell they're not celebrating this. You know, but we don't have that. It's a different time.
But still, you know, if you're a classic fan and you're going, like, for example, Genesis is, you know, I'm a major Genesis fan, and they've had the videos and they're doing a set list. There's a Genesis song called Fading Lights, which is a great song. But I think there's other songs that should be in the set, you know. But people are saying, no, it really sounds very nice. You know, it really mixes in live. But you know, everybody's got their opinion.
Maybe Genesis can play a song about rape. Maybe they could do that.
I think they have one, Silver Rainbow. Speaking of Genesis, there's one song that they can't do, Illegal Alien. They could not do that song. Now, that's a song that they couldn't, even if it was popular, that might be a problem doing. You know?
Listen, they're going to sell tickets no matter what, these bands. Jenna, people are going to see Rolling Stones. It makes me think that ticket sales are not good for the Rolling Stones because this seems completely contrived. But okay, we'll move on. But you know, Joe, I don't think it's a victim of the cancel culture because nobody gave a shit. Nobody was clamoring to cancel these guys. They're going to be dead soon.
I think it's a reaction to the cancel culture is what I think.
I think it's a reaction to low ticket sales, maybe. I think it's a reaction to, hey, we don't want to talk about our dead drummer anymore, maybe. Maybe we could talk about something else. Change the subject.
Hell.
What? Listen, that I guarantee you talking about, you know, the passing of Charlie Watts is much more difficult for these guys than talking about a song from 1971. I guarantee you it's much harder for those guys. So,
yeah.
You know what?
That's the way you put it.
Well, no, but if the reporters are coming with Brown Sugar and you give them 5-10 minutes of that, gotta go. On to the next.
I mean, you got these guys' legacy band with Ticket Soul. I mean, you know, yeah, they got a replacement drummer for Charlie Watts because he's dead. ZZ Top is going out with their old bass roadie who's taken over for Dusty Hill, who passed away. You know, I mean, you know, you still got to make a living. You still got to get the gig done.
All right, let's move on. Let's do some fart stories.
Welcome to Fart Stories.
All right. Meghan Trainor, another singer, just like the Rolling Stones, and her husband did their, quote, business together. The Grammy award-winning singer revealed that her new home with husband Daryl Sabara has two toilets placed next to each other. But after a bit of blowback on social media, Trainor took action to clear things up. To clear things up, we pooped once together, and we laughed and said, never again. But he will hang out with me if I'm pooping, because we soulmates, the 27-year-old, all about the bass singer. And I legit miss him when I am away from him, because I take really long shits apparently, and we pee together. Short for obviously. Earlier this week, Trainor explained the reason behind the peculiar bathroom feature on a recent episode of Nicole Byer's Why Won't You Date Me podcast. Because of this, we just got a new house and we did construction. She shared, nobody knows this, but in our bathroom there was one toilet, and a lot of times in the middle of the night when we're with the baby, we gotta pee at the same time. So I was like, can we please have two toilets next to each other? Okay. No.
This is called...
No. No.
No.
Let me tell you something. You're celebrities. You only have one bathroom in the house. I'm a fucking zero-list, half-assed comic musician. I got two fucking bathrooms.
Well, her new album is called Two Singers, One Toilet.
Oh, my God. Look, that was... Mr. Helix and I had a short list of things that we had to have in our house together. Two bathrooms. Not two toilets in the same friggin' room. Two separate bathrooms. Thank you very much. We don't want that much togetherness.
No, it's because you guys aren't in love like these kids.
Together.
I'd rather not.
We did it. There was a customer, when I was in a festival, there was a customer, I think he had two toilets in a bathroom, and my helper had to go use the bathroom. He comes out and goes, they got two toilets in the bathroom. They can have shit races together. He was the guy with the llama spit in his face.
Oh, God.
I mean, I'm not pooping next to anybody. I don't want to pee next to anybody. This is my time. This is Davin's alone time. No.
Alone time, please.
I do wonder though if the two toilets side by side will reduce the chances of the men missing the bowl.
No. Clearly not.
I remember when we were going. We went to where the hell was it? Allentown or Scranton, whatever. To scope out that possible gig, and we both get out of the car, run into the bed, you pull into the stall. I go, God, it's like peeing next to Secretariat. You got one. Fuck you! Secretariat just galloped in and take a leak.
All right. Two things for that. First,
just pointed out, remember the love toilet on Saturday Night Live? Do you guys remember that?
No.
No.
Oh, it was like a lover's couch where the seats are sitting backwards and you're supposed to hold hands.
Oh.
And the lover's toilet had two toilets next to each other facing opposite directions. And they were like holding hands.
Let me address Joe's thing first. First of all, what type of creep hangs out in horse stalls listening to them pee? Ew, you're a sicko. Second, and as important, I don't need commentary while I'm taking a piss, you fucking moron. So that's all.
He wasn't happy. Yeah.
Yeah, man, because I don't need your opinion on my urine. And your opinion is zero. What? The only thing that is less than your opinion on my urine is your opinion on rap. Both of those things I'm not going to you for opinions on.
But listen to them.
But can you imagine? So you do your business. Now you're there while you're wiping asses. I mean, really?
No, absolutely not.
Well, what'd you think was going to happen, Pip? You're both done shitting.
You know what? I belong to a Facebook group, don't judge me, called Bathrooms with Threatening Auras.
You're a little judged. You're a little judged.
Hilarious.
All right.
People look at real estate listings and they see bathrooms that there's something terribly wrong with them. It's hilarious. And this has shown up.
Fragile Sky, our old drummer, used to rehearse at his house, and the bathroom didn't have a door on it. I don't know where the fucking door was. There was no door in the bathroom. And it's like, I hold the leak until I left and go to the rest of it. I'm just afraid his girlfriend walks by or something.
In a house? What type of animal is that? It's bad enough in the high school locker room. I've talked about that enough on the show.
Elementary school, there were no doors on there. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
How come they're worried about, people who can't identify their genders walking into a school bathroom, but they can't fucking put doors on the fucking stalls? How about you put doors on first, and then we'll worry about the random transgender person that doesn't even live in your fucking county? How about we do that first?
I know, that was brutal. I mean, when I got into junior high and high school, they had the doors on the bathrooms, but in elementary school, they didn't have doors on the stalls. Fucking
crazy. In case you needed a hand.
I don't know. I thought that was really sick that they didn't have doors on the boys' room stalls. When I found that out, I was like, what?
You know, you're awkward enough as a kid in elementary school. You have a door in the bathroom?
You know what would make that less creepy, Pip? If while you were going to the bathroom without a bathroom stall, somebody was going, woo! And yeah, right next to you. That would make... All right, let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll do some scamming scammers. On the break, we have new music from Chip Wars with Don't Come Undone and John Carr with Change Your Name. And you can listen to learn more about both those artists at deucemusic.com. Scamming scammers.